truer word has ever been spoken. This is the Jim Rome Show, starring me, Jim Rome. What's going on? Welcome to the program. Great to be with you on this Thursday. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. New day, new show. What's going on? Welcome to the program. All right, let me start you off. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. You know the drill. You know what you're supposed to do with that. Have a take. Don't suck. Pick up the phone. Hit us up. The first voice you hear is not going to belong to me. It will belong to Adam Hawk. Hawk is going to say, Jim Rome Show, what do you want to talk about? At that point, your response should not be, hey, Hawk, dope, put me through. I don't know what I want to talk about. I'll figure it out when I'm on the air. Figure it out before you pick up the phone, and then tell it to Adam Hawk.
Jim
if
Rome
you've got
Show.
A good answer, there's Garus. If you have a good answer, Hawk will put you on hold, and the wait will be short. 1-800-636-8686. Or if you prefer, you can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Or if you prefer, you can just shoot me an email. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Three best ways to get through. Coming up next segment, a former NFL wide receiver and a Super Bowl champ, Torrey Holt. In hour number two, a senior NFL writer for CBS Sports, Will Brinson. And in hour number three, a guard for the Dallas Mavericks, Seth Curry. All of that is coming up. You know what to do. Also, I dropped episode 111 of the Jim Rome podcast yesterday with Seth Greenberg, which is one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite dudes, and that's one of my favorite episodes. I will have a reset of that as well. You've got the phone number. Go ahead and use it. All right, so where do we start? Do we start with Jimmy Butler, who I've not talked about in a minute or so after what happened last night? Or do we talk about the dueling pressers? You know, there's always that conversation about how important is that introductory presser? How important is it to win the introductory presser? Kind of depends on your point of view. Let's break this down, though, because after a flurry of NFL head coaching announcements, we finally do get the pressers. Now, to a lot of people who are yelling about who won the press conference and how much that matters, let me start with Matt Rhule. He definitely brought some passion to his. And his press conference also included this detail from owner David Tepper. Tepper, GM, Marty Herney, and communications director Stephen Drummond flew to Texas so they can meet with Rhule. Now, Rhule and his wife Julie and their kids were just returning from a vacation in Cabo. The Panthers contingency pulls into the driveway behind the family. Well, let me let Tepper pick up the story from there.
He was in his shorts and Mexico t-shirt or whatever. I don't know if he had a suntan or what, but I helped him in with the luggage a little bit. And then Julie had all this food out there, which was just too much food, you know, so she was just feeding us this stuff. And Marty Herney had about 25 meatballs there, just as an aside.
Just as an aside. All right, first things first. What I need to know is, did Rhule keep his shorts and his, quote, Mexico t-shirt on for the interview? Or did he change back into one of his famous smocks? And was it a practice smock? Or was it a game day smock? Or was it one of his formal smocks? I mean, after all, dude was sitting down for the most important job interview of his entire life. Personally, I hope that he stayed in his beach wear because that'd be awesome. Nearly as awesome as Tepper saying that Herney had 25 meatballs. Are you kidding me about that? I haven't heard of an eating display like that since Papa John was bragging on how he murdered 40 of his own pizzas in about 30 days. I'm not sure how anybody could survive 40 of those particular pies in 40 years, much less in 30 days. But if the Papa says it so, it must be so.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days. It was that slow-mo when I need it, Alvin. The Papa John slow-mo. Then again, this is the same dude who recently said that my main man, Mark Shapiro, should be in jail. Oh, okay, John. The same dude who bum-rushed our Super Bowl set looking for free pub back in the day.
Better ingredients.
Thank you, Alvin.
Better pizza. Papa John's.
But I digress. Back to the Panthers presser. There are some other good stories, too, coming out of that thing. Like Herney saying, quote, I can't stress this enough. Gets off the plane, goes in the driveway, sits in the dining room, and he's just instant energy. After an hour and a half, they're right. I just said, oh, man, I got to turn him. We got to try to convince this guy that Carolina's the place for him because he was just very impressive. End quote. You want to impress that guy. You want to convince that guy. Just put a $60 million check in front of him. And they did, and it worked. And now reportedly other NFL owners are pissed off about that. Back to that in a minute. Meantime, Rule was telling about the reaction that his son Bryant had to the whole thing. Once the Panthers brass left, then the kid rolled up on his old man.
My son came downstairs and he said, are we going to Carolina? I said, no. And he stormed, this is a true story, now stormed out of the house. He said, you had one job, like that he wanted to be here, so.
Good one, coach. You can hear the energy though, right? I see why this guy got their attention. And as you can see, the Carolina presser had one great story after another. I mean, that was fun. That's how you win the presser. Meanwhile, the Cowboys had a presser of their own, and they introduced Mike McCarthy. And there were stories, all right, but there weren't great stories. In fact, these stories were nearly impossible to follow. Ever since McCarthy was named as their guy, there's been one report after another that makes that dynamic between Jerry and Mike seem just a little bit, I don't know, whack.
That's whack.
It's weird. It's weird. There was that report of the slumber party, the sleepover. There was the report that their connection was, quote, like love at first sight. And now there is this from Jerry. Jerry explaining why McCarthy is now the Dallas Cowboys head coach.
My sister explained to my dad one time when she was explaining why she wanted to divorce. And dad loved her husband. And he said, what's gotten into you? And she said, I don't hear bells. He said, bells? I hadn't heard bells for the last 30 years. What's that got to do with it? Well, the bottom line is that's a dad trying to advise his daughter on the right move. The bottom line is I heard bells.
The hell is Tom Thibodeau doing there? The hell is that old man talking about? I mean, seriously, the hell is everybody laughing at? You heard bells. Did you also smell burnt toast? Hey, Jay, are you sure you're not having a stroke? I mean, seriously, where was he going with that story? You're having a press conference. You're introducing your new head coach. Why are you telling us a story about your sister getting divorced and what dad thought about that? And could that story have been any more convoluted? Hey, tell me this, Gramps. Tell me this. How many mosquitoes did you have to circumcise in order to get this deal done with McCarthy?
Circumcising the mosquito.
I mean, I know there were, quote, two bottom lines and a ton of bells, but I still have no idea what the hell he was talking about. What does Jerry's sister and her divorce have to do with Mike McCarthy getting hired? Anybody know? Anybody at all? Like, with each passing day, Jarrah makes less and less sense. So I can't help with that. I heard bells. Crap. I heard bells. Did you see dead people too, Jarrah? And his kid, sitting to the side, grinning hysterically throughout the entire proceeding, did not help matters. And how about this one from Jarrah? Jarrah went on and said this.
You got a choice. You can get in that foxhole with somebody that hadn't been shot at, hadn't ever been in a foxhole. You can get in there with somebody that's been shot at, or you can get in there with somebody that's been shot at and hit and still going. Now, that's one I won't end there with.
Yeah, so I'm reading this right, Jarrah. You just hired a head coach who's currently bleeding out in a foxhole. I mean, don't they have to be in like some crazy, fiery car wreck where they get their head cut off too before you know they're worth anything at all? I mean, this whole thing about that foxhole stuff, I think it's high time that everybody involved in sports stopped with all the war metaphors and all the war analogies. I mean, you're not soldiers. This is not war. It's a game. You're not in a foxhole on the front line in Europe. You're wearing a suit in a luxury suite. So why don't we just dial back all the military rhetoric? And Jerry, though, was not alone in telling stories that didn't go anywhere. He was not alone in telling stories that didn't make any sense. Michael had one of his own.
Jerry's telling a story about the purchase of the Dallas Cowboys. And at the end of the story, he leans over to me and he grabs me by the forearm and reaches out to shake my hand. He says, and you need to be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So I jumped up and hugged him. But And I'll stop right there. We had a hell of a time. Just say that. That's a moment. That's a Tibbs moment. That's back. A story I'll be telling the rest of my life.
Tibbs is back. I just don't know what he's doing at that presser. I got to be honest, fellas. I'm having a hard time following either one of you. So McCarthy is saying that Jarrah was telling him a story about buying the Cowboys. And then at the end of that story, he told Mike that he should be the head coach. And then they hugged it out. And that's a moment that Mike will never forget. Yeah, I guess as much as a moment as you can have if it involves some super rich old guy and some unemployed middle-aged guy hugging it out during a slumber party. Yeah, to me, here's the big takeaway from that presser and from everything that's come out since this whole deal came together and went down. My big takeaway is Jarrah and Mike like each other. There's some real infatuation there. Like, I'm shocked that Mike didn't go with, hey, Jarrah, you had me at circumcised mosquito.
Circumcising the mosquito.
Just as I'm shocked that Jerry didn't have he and Mikey put on their towels and head down through the dressing room, kind of like spanking themselves as if they were emulating riding a horse. I mean, that's what Ezekiel Elliott does. And in Jerry's own words, that's the type of thing that makes him an asset on and off the field.
You know what's fun? Sometimes Zeke will do something like that. He'll put a towel on or he'll put some shorts on or something and head down through the middle of the dressing room kind of spanking himself as he emulates the riding the horse. And that's before a game, so you can see what a asset he is on and off the field to the Dallas Cowboys.
Because he puts on a towel and spanks himself? That makes him an asset. Man, that gets more and more weird every time I hear it. Right, Tibbs? So really, I don't understand anything that Jarrah is rambling on about these days, but I do see him working. As much as we are all on the clock, Jarrah truly is running out of time. Running out of time to win a Super Bowl and probably running out of time on life. This is why this guy was so hell-bent on finding somebody who has experience, who has already won the big one. Somebody who he thinks can return this team to prominence quickly as opposed to rolling the dice on a hot college coach who's got to learn the process. I get that. I also get McCarthy spending all of the past year reinventing himself and his process and his approach and going to school on the things that got him fired in Green Bay. Maybe Mike has changed. Maybe McCarthy has innovated. Maybe he will kill his second chapter the way Andy Reid is in Kansas City after he left Philadelphia. Or you know what? Maybe McCarthy is not Reid. Maybe Jarrah won't be able to help himself, and he is going to meddle and interfere and not let McCarthy do what he needs to do in order to be successful. I really do not know what's going to happen. I just know this. I need these dudes to stop having sleepovers, stop talking about hearing bells, stop getting dusty at their pressers. Oh, and most of all, they need to stop circumcising mosquitoes.
Circumcising the mosquito.
Just hope they look better on the field than they do at the dais, because they looked and sounded awkward as hell.
Awkward?
Man, I haven't seen this much heart-wrenching bonding and waterworks since Two had his slingers back in the day.
It's my team. It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair. We lost as a team.
Hell, who am I to judge? Crying is caring in the Big D. Go win some games, my man. Michael, go win some games. I got to get out. I have more to say about that, too, believe it or not. When we come back, Torrey Holt, former NFL wide receiver and a Super Bowl champ, joins me. That's coming up next, and a lot more to get to. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. It's good to be with you on this Thursday. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. If not, I've got a phone line open. You know what it is. As promised, we are joined right now by a Super Bowl champion, a 7-time Pro Bowler, 6 straight seasons of 1,300 yards or more in receiving yardage. He wrapped up his NFL career with 920 receptions. 74 touchdowns. He was a member of the NFL's All-Decade Team of the 2000s. He was an ACC Player of the Year, a consensus All-American at NC State. He is a member of the College Football Hall of Fame, Class of 2019, and he is a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'm talking about Torrey Holt. Torrey, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. As always, good to chat with you, man.
You too, Torrey. Listen, before we talk about the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I want to ask you, Torrey, about the College Football Hall of Fame. You and I spoke at the Super Bowl last year after it had been announced that you were going in, but last month, you and the rest of the class officially were inducted. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, my goodness. It was unbelievable, and the class of guys, the 2019 class, College Football Hall of Fame class, was unbelievable. London Fletcher, part of that class. You know, I won the Super Bowl with London and St. Louis, played against him, played with him. Vince Young was in that class. Rocket Ishmael was in that class. Just unbelievable to be around guys that I grew up watching or, you know, idolizing and playing against. And now being, you know, we were all in one room being inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. And there's so many guys that's played the game of football, played college football, and to be, you know, just that small percentage to be recognized as a College Football Hall of Famer was an unbelievable feeling. Jim, I had so many emotions. I went through so many ranges of emotion, starting back to when I grew up in Gibsonville, North Carolina, to my time in Hargrave Military Academy, to NC State, to the St. Louis Rams, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, a short stint with the New England Patriots. You know, all those memories and emotions came up. So really, I was really, really humbled and fortunate to be able to represent my hometown of Gibsonville and to represent NC State in the College Football Hall of Fame. I was the sixth player, I think, in NC State's history to be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. So very humbling experience, but really good because I love the game of football, and just to be amongst football lore, it was incredible.
We were talking to Torrey Holt. You know, one more guy, Torrey, is part of that class, and I had him on this show recently, Terrell Buckley. Did you spend any time rapping with T-Buck? My man.
Hey, I love T. Buck, man. You know, when I was getting ready, as I was going in, I took down all the guys' names, and I'm looking for it now, but I can't find it. But I took down all their names, read up on them, wrote down some significant stats and all that. And Terrell Buckley, ladies and gentlemen, 50 interceptions, Jim, in pro football, unbelievable. But we played against him. You know, he was with the Denver Broncos, and that was one thing about Terrell Buckley. He was going to take away slants. He was going to take away hitches. He was really going to eliminate your quick game because he had a really good sense forward, and then he had unbelievable quickness and then trust. Like, he trusted himself in terms of what he saw. Well, he picked us off on Monday night, and there's me chasing him down. And so I told him at the Hall of Fame ceremony, I'm still chasing you. I said, I still had forgot that interception. So I still owe T-Buck one, but he's an incredible player, and now he's doing a good job of coaching out of Mississippi State.
That's a great story. Torrey Holt's joining us. Now, Torrey, last week the 15 finalists were announced for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What did it mean to you to see your name on that list?
Once again, a whelm of emotions. You know, just starting out again when I played ball in Pop Warner. And Jim, I never said to myself young like that, and even through college, and heck, even through the pros. Man, I'm going for the hall. For me, it was getting an opportunity to do what I love ever since a child, and be around great men to help me, great coaches to help me, playing consistently for a number of years to be able to master the craft, the art of playing the wide receiver position, and watching guys like Art Monk and Tim Brown and Jerry Rice and, you know, Andre Reed, all of the great guys, and now being able to Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Icy Bruce, this goes on and on, Marvin Harrison, Jimmy Smith. Now I'm being recognized with the elite of the elite in terms of guys who played in the National Football League. So it's, again, humbling, super excited, though, if you can't tell, super excited. But a great class of guys that I'm with in the 2020 class, Troy Polamalu, Edgerrin James, who we were drafted in the same year. He's fantastic as well. Zach Thomas, Brian Young, Richard Seymour. You know, I can go all day, but a tremendous class of guys, again, that I admired, played against, battled against, had some great competitions against John Lynch. I was telling a story the other day on my Instagram page about John Lynch and how when we watched film, he would strike into the film like he was shot out of a missile. Like, that's the kind of aggression that he played with. So John Lynch and Steve Atwater, Leroy Butler, just a great group of men that I'm associated with in terms of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Torrey Holt is a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. He's already in the College Football Hall of Fame. And Torrey, one more thought about that. Like in the past, you've said that you'd taken the approach that if it happens, it happens. But yep. Then you had a conversation with Tom Mack, the former great Ram. What did he tell you, and then how did that impact you?
No, he said to me, you know, you're here now. You're being recognized in that light. Because I think Tom had to wait some time, I think, as well. And he said, you know, to keep fighting, you know, to keep your name, your story, keep your legacy alive. And you can do that in a respectable manner. And I think I've done that, and I took his advice. And since then, you know, I just kept fighting. And, you know, when there was opportunities for me to state my case, I took advantage of those and tried to come across as respectful as I could. And now, Jim, I'm here. I'm a finalist. So, regardless of what I said up to this point, now that I'm in here, it's like none of that really matters. It's just being a finalist in itself for such an elite class. And I'm sure there's folks that would say there's a Hall of Famers better than there's some out there that's more worthy of Hall of Fame than Torrey Holt, and I'm pretty sure there is. But I'm here now, and I'm excited about it. And hopefully, in February, I'll be hearing my name called. Getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
We are talking to Torrey Holt, you know, and to a large extent, Torrey, it's kind of out of your hands. I mean, you can make your point,
yeah.
But at the same time, like when I'm looking at the other pieces that you had on the Rams team, in particular on offense, Kurt Warner, Orlando Pace, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, you mentioned, do you think that in some ways that as great as that was and as amazing as those teams were, then maybe that gets held against you and you're overlooked as a result? In other words, if you had the kind of production that you had and you put up the numbers for a different team, do you feel like maybe not only would you be under consideration, but you might already be in the Hall of Fame?
Correct. And Jim, that's right. I mean, I often think about that because, look, I was fortunate enough to come into the situation drafted to the St. Louis Rams with all the guys that I played with, and it helped my career tremendously. But I had that same attitude that I had in St. Louis, I would have had somewhere else. And I think I would have been as successful, though, if I would have been drafted to another club. But it is what it is, and I had no control over that. For me, I was sixth overall. I went in and I played like a sixth overall draft pick should play for a long period of time, and I was doing it with a group of guys that were older than I was, Jim. That's the other thing. Those guys were, you know, I was a young buck, but I was playing at such an elite level early on. For so long, I think that got lost. I think people could take that for granted. And then with such star power and the names that you mentioned, Marshall and Isaac and Kurt and Orlando Pace, it was kind of like, you know, I had to wait my turn, but that was okay. I was cool with that. My thing was I got to take care of my job. I got to make sure that I'm showing up every practice, showing up every Sunday, and I'm producing. And I was able to do that, and I was able to do it for a long period of time with those guys. And without some of those guys.
Yeah, Torrey, one more thought about that. Quick follow-up. Because you had more receiving yardage in your first five seasons in the NFL than anybody else in the history of the sport. It's supposed to take receivers, Torrey, a year or two or more before they can really master the craft at the NFL level.
Yeah.
How were you able to come into the league and have the immediate impact that you did?
Well, I would say this. I was coached well in college. Coach Kaiser, our offensive coordinator, did a good job of moving me around, challenging me. Coach Fisher was awesome as well. My senior year, I had Daryl Moody as well. So I had some good coaches, guys that taught me and held me accountable, going out and practicing and studying tape and preparing myself for the game. So thanks to my college coaches. And then when I went to the pros, I had examples. You know, I saw Isaac every day. I saw Ricky Prohl every day. I saw Arthur King every single day. I saw Marshall every day. Coach Saunders, was our receiver coach, was fantastic in the way he drove us and had us confident to go out and pursue our goals and dreams and really maximize our potential as wide receivers. So great situation there. And then my own individual talents. Funny, I was on Instagram the other day and someone said, Torrey, man, you were just better than guys. And you just had, you know, more God-given ability. And he's absolutely right. I was better than guys. I had more God-given ability than a lot of guys. But I also had the work ethic, Jim, the drive to want to be good at football and my position. But not only that, also being a good teammate, you know, rallying the troops when I needed to, you know, being there, showing up in big games, that mattered. So So I think that's where I got it from. And that was what drove me for 11 years in the National Football League to try to play at a very, very high level.
Tori, last thought, that drive. I'm always curious about this. Where did the drive come from? Were you wired for it? Was it always like that? Is that the way you always remember it? Or was it something you were able to manufacture?
Yeah, when it came down to sports, Jim, I had to drive. I'll show up at any park. I'll go anywhere to play. I just wanted to compete. I knew early on that I had the ability to play sport and play it well. My uncles did it. My aunties did it. My dad did it. My mom was athletic. So it was in me. And then growing up here in North Carolina, hearing about guys and seeing guys like David Thompson and Michael Jordan and James Worthy and Lawrence Taylor. I mean, I grew up around greatness, man, in sports. So it's just always been a part of me. And once I figured out that I could actually do this and do it, I got a chance to be great at this. I got the resources. I have the ability. I have a platform to do it. So why not go out and make the most of it with my teammates? Won championships, impacted the game on so many levels. I'm excited about it, and really, really thrilled about where our game is going and still having an opportunity to be associated with the National Football League. It's really cool.
He is a member of the College Football Hall of Fame class of 2019. He is also a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a Super Bowl champ, a 7-time Pro Bowler. He is Torrey Holt. Torrey, I love the energy. It's always great to get caught up with you. Congrats on that induction. I'll be watching you for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and it's always good to have you on the show. Torrey, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim, as always. All the best, man.
You too. Do it again soon. Torrey, thank you. Man, anytime you have a guy with that kind of pedigree, that kind of career, that kind of energy, who's that present, man, welcome on this show. Anytime. Love it. That's how you get started. 1-800-636-8686. Even if there was a four-letter bomb in there, inadvertently. It's all right. My man's fired up. I love it. Love the energy. When we come back, speaking of energy and heat, Jimmy Butler. It's been a minute or so since Jimmy Butler was a topic on this show. And whenever Jimmy Butler is a topic on this show is better for it. That's coming up next. Before I get there, though, I do owe you a sports update. So
live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This weekend, the NFL on CBS is home to some great matchups. Saturday night, you've got the Titans trying to shock the world once again when they head to Baltimore to face Lamar Jackson and the top-seeded Ravens. Sunday, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, two of the game's elite young quarterbacks square off, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Both games begin with the NFL Today on CBS. I love those matchups. Who you got? How you playing those games? I've been playing with the idea, assuming that the big head is physically in the office tomorrow, about bringing him in to have him break down his picks. Yeah, you didn't know that, did you, James Kelly? Did you wake the hell up, big head?
Idiot kicker.
We'll see. I'm not there yet. I'm not sure that he's come in since he read any of the mean tweets about himself. All right, really quickly. My thanks to Torrey Holt. Love his energy. That energy is so infectious. Dear Snag, this is an email. Snag, love the podcast with Seth Greenberg. Could have went another hour. Always amazed at these coaches' memories. Rattling off Long Beach players like it was yesterday. Wore fake John in New York. Jake in Indy. What, you mean this fake John?
John
in New York. How you doing, John?
Thank you, Jim, for taking my call. Jim, that
Hold
interview...
Hold up, Alvin. Spoiler alert. That's not really John in New York. That is the fake John in New York, Alvin.
The other month with heavyweight champ Del Monte Wilder.
Del Monte?
That was like the best interview that I ever heard. in my whole life, Jim.
So what do you think is better? What's better, fake John in New York or fake Matt in L.A.? Anyway, back to Seth Greenberg. He is the guest on this week's podcast. Yeah, I mean, of course his recall is amazing. He's a brilliant guy. But the reason these coaches can always remember facts and figures and games and matchups and personalities, I don't know, they're smart. That's how they became head coaches. There aren't too many dopes who make it to that level, who ascend to that sort of thing. But Seth is amazing. I want to reset that. That is such a good conversation. I had so much fun with that. Dear Rome, did you catch that Cowboys press conference with Gilbert Grape's mom? Big McCarthy. Somebody's been eating well. Son Mitch from Buffalo. Sending it. All right. Let's just talk about that very quickly. Personal appearance, still not show fodder. Granted. For a guy who had a year off, Mike McCarthy did not necessarily look like that guy who was, I don't know, tanned, well-rested, shredded, been hitting the gym. No, I mean, he looked like the same guy he always looked like, and maybe even a few pounds heavier. However, it's neither here nor there. I'm actually fascinated by what this guy did. You've probably seen the reports. He did a pretty good job about getting some prominent NFL journos to come to his barn. He's got a refurbished barn that's not that far outside of Lambeau. And he remained in Green Bay even after he got fired. And I'm always fascinated by this, but really never been as fascinated by it as I am right now with McCarthy. Generally, when coaches get broken off the way he was, there's some shock, there's some anger, there's some bitterness. But then ultimately, they bounce back. They got to be resilient. They got to be mentally tough. And then they got to think, all right, what's my next step? How do I put myself in the best position to get back in this game, to get back in the fight, to get back in the arena? And so a lot of these guys will take some time off, spend some time with the family, spend some time with their wife, and they'll get right. But what they'll also do is they'll start going on a tour, and they'll spend some time with their peers, and coaches will let them in to observe what they do. And he really was no different, except what he did, and you probably know the story, what McCarthy did, and I'm way more interested in this than I am whether or not he gained weight instead of losing weight while he was off. He's got this unbelievable barn that he refurbished, and he got a few other unemployed coaches together, and they met, and they went to work. He called it like the McCarthy Project. And this guy, I guess for a time, Monday through Friday, would just grind. He went in there, they broke down a bunch of tape, they look at different trends, they had an analytics guy came in, and he literally went back to work. And he went back to work in terms of figuring out what didn't work at Green Bay and how he was going to make himself an attractive candidate in the event that he got another opportunity. That to me is fascinating. Not just went to see a few other coaching peers and watch what they did, but this guy set up this entire facility, like this compound, and he went to work with a staff as if he had a team. And by the way, it worked. He got another job. He got a really good job. He got the Cowboys job. So if you want to talk about that and whether or not this guy has changed, whether or not this guy's reinvented himself, that's fine. If you want to talk about how much weight you think he's gained since he got fired, that's not fine. Do better, Mitch. Mitch, you had one good email, and I thought, this is a guy to watch. And then you've been getting progressively worse ever since. You know what you should do, Mitch? You should start every single day in a room somewhere with a laptop or a crayon and work on your emails and then not send them. And just keep working on them and working on them and working on them until you can fight your way back in the rotation. You know, kind of like McCarthy did. But don't gain any weight while you're doing it, Mitch. Hey, Jim, we believe Matt Rhule has a very classy wardrobe. Signed, Morning Zoo Radio Hosts. Hawaiian shirts, shorts, etc. No, hey, look, everybody's got their style. I've got mine, you've got yours, but he's got his. Man, he rocks that smock. It's a really smart smock. It's a really smart smock. My question is, they made such a point of saying, this guy rolled up, he came off his trip in Cabo, he sits down, he's still in his, quote, Mexican T-shirt. I want to know if that's how he conducted the interview or if he went upstairs, swapped out the tee, and put the smock back on. And was it his practice smock, game smock, or formal smock? I mean, you can't just sit down in front of a billionaire where you're trying to get 60 mil from and not dress the part, right? Dear Jim, I think Jerry Jones' story about hearing bells makes total sense. Sincerely, Kenny Smith's sandwich analogy. All right, if I'm not mistaken, it's not the sandwich analogy, but rather it was about him driving to Staples back in the day. Keyshawn had the sandwich analogy. Kenny Smith had the, if you and I, Jim, were driving to Staples or the sports arena or whatever it was, wherever the Clippers play, that was his analogy. Quote, wherever the Clippers play.
Jim, if me and you drove from L.A. to down to where the Clippers play down there a game, and they said they're going to give us $100 to do it, and I'm going to look at you and go, hey, Jim, at the end of the day, I drove more than you did. So we're going to negotiate how much each of us get. I think I deserve $60, you deserve $40. I put the gas in, what have you. So on both sides feel that their part is bigger than the other side's part. They think that pumping the gas, so to speak, is more important than driving the car. And then they think that washing the car to get it down there is more. So everyone right now is just saying that their part is so important, and that's why you have these long negotiations and you have this long stalemate.
Well, that was kind of whack. I don't know what that means at all. That was Kenny Smith. Anyway, this guy, Paul in Albany. Paul in Albany says, well, what about Kenny Smith's sandwich analogy? No, Keyshawn had the sandwich analogy, and Kenny Smith had the analogy if he and I were to drive down to where the Clippers play. I don't know. This was Keyshawn on the sandwich.
You killing me and you ain't even read my book.
Keyshawn, man, I have read the book and I'm not killing you. I just said you whacked your teammates and I couldn't believe it.
Did I whack them?
Dude, you whacked them. You called your quarterback a Jake.
Did I call him a Jake?
You called him a faker.
Okay.
Jake is a faker.
Did I say he was really hurt, or did I say I was thinking that one side of me and one other side of me wondered if he was faking for the coaching staff?
Yeah, I mean, that's calling out a dude's character, man. That's questioning his manhood.
You think so? I don't think so. I think, first of all, you got to read the book. If you haven't read the book, then there's nothing that you can say about it.
Okay, let me tell me the difference between you wondered in your mind if he might be faking and the guy's a faker. I don't understand the difference there, excerpt, book, or not.
Dude, you asked me that, how can that cross my mind, right? You're asking me how could it cross my mind? How could I wonder whether or not a half a side of me says it's faking? It's like a half a side of you says, should I eat this sandwich or should I not eat the sandwich? But then you decide. You say, oh, well, and you leave it alone.
That was a conversation Keyshawn and I had on this show way back in the day when he had that book. Wild times, right? I also told you the story where Key and I were fine. You know, we had that give and take on that day. But again, he once knocked on my door because he bought his mother a house in the same neighborhood that I lived in the 818. And he came banging on my door one day. And I'm like, yo, Key, what's up? He said, you've been talking bleep about me again, Rome. I said, no, I have not. He said, yes, you have. And I looked him right in the eye. Well, I looked up at him. He's taller than me. I said, Key, I haven't. All right? Like, where are you going now? Where are you going with this? He's like, my boys told me that Jim said this. And he goes on this whole rant about him and somebody else. I don't need to reset. I said, I never even had that conversation. You got the wrong Jim. And we're going back and forth on my porch, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then we did finally flush it out. He had the wrong Jim. It wasn't Jim Rome. And then it was fine. He's like, all right, man. See you later, bro. I'm like, see you later, Key. That conversation that I just played for you was in 1997. Me and Key. Remember that book, Just Give Me the Damn Ball? Hour number two, straight ahead.